necessarily reflect the views of Revere Radio Network, Rob Revere, or any other host on the network. They are the personal thoughts and feelings of the host giving the presentation. We support total free speech here at Revere Radio Network, even when it's ugly. Enjoy.
Hey, you're listening to Revere Radio Network. Stay tuned.
You all know why I'm here, not at all. And I would never try to convince you of the our cause, the soldier. And we are the war.
We keep it up until we keep it going when they're wrapping up the truth. Forgive this thing. The agendas can't fight for truth. Then there be no need to fight. The fatal, there's no fatality. Support U.S. principality. In the separation, we all suffer. We need to be in love with each other. This isn't training, actual invading. Depleted uranium is raining. Iraq, just know we don't have Bush's back. With the vicious attack, crossing borders with fight. On foot, catching flight. For hypocrisy, I will not fight. The Most High loves I, the word won't die. Even after all the times it's been revised. I've been shot by Charlton Heston, and he even autographed the weapon. The bullet was lodged in my left shin. I asked the doctor, and she kept it in.
The stress is waiting for the tension of battle, ready to make war. With their god. They're back.
You're listening to TruthLoveFreedom.org.
Your cell phone, your world, your time, your ideas. No barcode, no party, no ID, no beers. Your bank card, your license, your thoughts, your fears. No SIM card, no disco, no photo, not here. Your budget, your sin, your passions, your regrets, your profits, your time off, your fashions, your sex, your pills, your grass, your tips, your ass, your laughs, your balls. We want
to talk.
Your habits, your fears. Give us your address, your shoe size, your ears, your digits, your plans, your number, your eyes, your schedule, your desktop, your details, your life. Show us your children, your photos, your home. Here, take credit, take insurance, take a loan, get a job, get a pension, get a haircut, get a suit, sing the lottery, play football, play the field, or some toot. We'll show you food, we'll show you food, we'll buy you food, we'll pay you food, we'll sell you crap, we'll charge you food, we'll buy big things, we'll sell you food. Your love, your dreams, your checkbook, your essence, your sweat, your screams, your security, your sobriety, your innocence, your society, yourself, your place, your distance, your space.
Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control again. Here, watch this. Shut up. You are free to do as we tell you. You are free to do as we tell you.
Here's Matters, here's Ruby, here's Cola, here's Pizza, here's TV, here's some rock, and some roller. Not commercials, nor commercials, not Jerry, not Oprah. Buy a better life, with the comfort of your sofa. Here's popcorn, here's magazines, here's milkshake, here's blue jeans, here's patty bar, here's armpit, here's football shirt, here's baseball cap, here's live talk shows, here's video games, here's Cola Live, here's Tinder, here's Pinterest, here's college, here's all my things, here's plastic.
Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control again. Here's American Gladiators. Watch. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Here's American Gladiators. Here is 56 channels of it. Watch these pituary retards bang their fucking skulls together and congratulate you on living in the land of freedom. Here you go, America. You are free to do as we tell you. You are free to do as we tell you.
What's up? Okay, today is, what is today? June 20th, 2008, and this is Truth, Love, Freedom, truthlovefreedom.org. This is your host, So Real, and we're back for another week. And I'm excited about tonight because I have been in communication with a certain individual for quite a long period of time now, and I am just blown away by the research this individual has done on the developing North American Union and the NAFTA superhighway. I really hope that she starts to get more attention because she's literally creating an archive of information, verifying the fact that, yes, this is occurring. It's not what, you know, the propagandists say it is. It's just a simple highway or expanding an existing highway. And they even have the nerve to say that it's not even a NAFTA superhighway at that, when that is a term they coined themselves. And there's, you know, they've talked about it in the House of Representatives, and there, you know, there's documentation of it. It's irrefutable. It's just that there hasn't been a whole lot of really hefty research done, at least to my knowledge. Nothing even near as complete as Vicki Davis, which we're going to have on here in just a few minutes. And so I'm really excited about that. She's going to drop us a bunch of information. If you, you know, I'm going to try to put as many of the links as I can, because her going through her website is like going through a library of documentation. She does a very good job at simplifying it, but it can be very complex. It's, you know, anytime you're dealing with the government, they like to make things more complicated, I believe, for the sake of trying to keep other people who are not involved in the process out of it as much as possible. The average person doesn't really understand what they're talking about. But when it's broken down into simple terms, it's pretty outrageous what they're doing, and it's even more outrageous that they're doing it without our permission. And so we're going to have Vicki Davis here on the phone in just a second. Justin is not going to be here on the show today. He was going to do the Justice Report. That's not going to work out because he had things to do at work. So we're going to go ahead and drop that. But I did want to run through a few things with you. Now, just before we get started, you can call us today and talk to Vicki Davis or ask her questions using the number 1-877-REVERE-0. That's 1-877-738-3730. You can also contact me via chat client at Skype. Is our Skype address is truthlovefreedom.org. AOL is soul space real space of space TLF. Yahoo is soul real TLF, all one word, all lowercase. And MSN soul real TLF at hotmail.com. And we're also on Stickcam. If you go to the website truthlovefreedom.org, there is a little video deal, broadcasting me live, and you can watch me do the show in addition to chat in the chat client with me if I can check it from time to time, or you can, you know, maybe hopefully chat with other people if there's anybody there. This is actually, I think, the first successful attempt to do the stick cam. In the past, for whatever reason, things didn't work out, but it's working now, so feel free to use it. You can go to truthlovefreedom.org and click on it, and it'll take you right over to my profile on stick cam. Now, before we get into all this, I definitely want to say that Revere Radio is trying to get donations, and I got to admit that I'm somewhat disappointed to see that after, you know, so much of a period of time, they only had $13, and it's been quite a while. They're not asking for much. They're not asking for thousands or millions. They're asking for, if you can spare it, $10, $5, $20 would be great. If you can get a bunch of people to donate $20, it's I mean, it's cheap. I mean, that's not a whole, I'm not asking for a whole lot of money, you know, and you can do it very easily online, and it will help them out a great deal to try to increase the quality of the site and the broadcasting that's going on Revere Radio. So please do that. Also, newworldorderpodcast.com. It's actually nwopodcast.com. If you want to have a podcast, you can go there, you can register, and you can start your own podcast. They're basically allowing you to host your podcast right off of there. And it's, you know, we talked before about the quality of freedom of speech and the fact that we are lucky to have it due to the internet, and that is... the days on that may be numbered. I'm hoping that we can stop any pursuit to try to isolate the internet off from us, but they're working very, very diligently to try to do that, and I encourage you to take the opportunities that are before you. Go to nwopodcast.com and voice your opinion on there. This is, you know, Revere Radio is all about free speech. You can go on there and basically... you know, lay out your perceptions about what's going on in the world and contribute to what's a growing community of people who at one time did not have a way to communicate with each other. So, you know, we can talk about things, what's going on, what the problems are, and how to fix them. And I encourage you to participate. So I'm going to bring on Vicki Stewart here in just a second. But I'm going to run through my website here, some stuff that I have posted. I'm not going to read it all to you, but interesting stuff that's been going on in the media lately. I have been noticing that the media is basically making the announcement over and over and over again that the New World Order is changing, guys. Didn't know if you knew what, and some of you may not even know what the New World Order is. For those who do, the New World Order is... this idea of a society that they never really specify exactly what it is. At least it depends on who you get the information from. And the idea behind the New World Order was that the New World Order was America. America was the supreme power of the world. We were the one that was going to bring the world into democracy. But there's a problem, because the New World Order is now changing. Why is it changing? Because America is seeing its decline of power. And they're saying, oh... this is a one title of an article. Is the role of the U.S. changing in the New World Order? Well, that's a surprise. Not to me, but I'm just joking. I'm trying to figure out how to explain this right. Basically, they made it sound like the New World Order was the United States as the supreme power of the world. Now they're saying in the New World Order, there is going to be no supreme power of the world. The United States is... having, because of its decline, is having to restructure the New World Order. By coincidence, it's not like they wanted that to happen, but hey, we need to change with the times, guys. We need to unite all the governments. There can't be a supreme power of the land anymore. There needs to be a global government supreme power where everybody has a say, right? And they make it sound like it's a new idea, and it's just the product of what's going on in the world. No. This has been an agenda that's been unfolding for a long time. Their intention was never to have the United States be the New World Order. And but you're seeing that, you know. They keep announcing that the rule of the United States over the world has ended. And we are seeing our decline, and it's inevitable. It's only a matter of time. And if we want to participate in the future world order, we need to change the way we do things. Convenient, no doubt. So go and check out that article on truthlovefreedom.org, Role of the U.S. Changing in the New World Order by Mr. Kagan, and you'll love who this guy is. I put some information on there about him. I don't like him at all. Also, there's been a video circulating on MySpace about Obama. Basically, he's been writing this idea that he's going to get us out of Iraq. He has no intention of getting us out of Iraq, and I've been telling people that as I've been campaigning for Ron Paul, that this notion that Obama is going to do anything different than previous presidents is an illusion. And you can tell by the people he's bringing onto his staff, and he's positioning himself very well. You know, he's voted for some of the right things, and he's looking pretty good. And, you know, I don't think that's an accident, guys. You don't, you know, decide overnight, yeah, I think I'm going to run for president. No, you have to groom yourself. You have to prepare yourself. And I think he's done a good job of doing that. But he, even though over and over and over again he's claiming to be the person who's going to get us out of Iraq, there's video of him basically saying, no, he's never said that. So I have that on the website, too. Go check it out. Very enlightening. And if you ever meet somebody who's an Obama supporter, and you're going to probably see a lot more as time goes on here, make sure you let them know. He has no intention of bringing us out of Iraq. So I hope you're voting for him for something other than that. Because if that's the basis of why you're voting for him, you're going to be sadly disappointed. Let's see here. This is one of my favorite articles recently. It's so revealing. It's unbelievable. I mean, you go to my go. Please, at least if you're gonna go, if anything, go to my website and read this one article. It's called "Preparing Unipolar Children for a Nonpolar World." Now, they talk about the old world order as being bipolar, meaning the Soviet Union and the United States basically had the power in the world, and we were in competition with each other during the Cold War. The unipolar world is the United States as the head, right? The unipolar, we're the one power of the world. We were supposed to be the New World Order. Now they're saying it's going to be a nonpolar world, meaning that there isn't going to be a single world power. There's going to be a grouping of the nations into a nonpolar world power in the sense that nobody has more power than the other person. At least that's what they say. Of course, you got to take into consideration the people who are saying this are also the people who said that the New World Order was the United States, that we were going to spread democracy, and that didn't happen. What we ended up doing is basically creating a very chaotic world, especially in the Middle East and South America. And now they're promising you that this is going to be for the best, you know, the benefit of all of us. You can make up your mind on whether or not you want to believe it, but I would recommend that you read this article and look at all the things I've highlighted. It's very, very interesting. Okay, so I'm going to bring Vicki Davis on the line here in just a moment, and we're going to get into a lot of information. I recommend that you have a pen and paper ready and just be prepared for the stuff that she's going to say. It's going to be a lot of information. I hope it's not over your head. I'm sure she's going to do her best job to break it down for you, but I've been so incredibly impressed that, I mean, when she sent me the outline of this thing, I just thought to myself, oh my God, I either have to put a nice amount of research into this or just basically let her have the floor. Well, considering I only got it a day or two ago, there's no way I had time to put the research in, but it was impressive. Let me just say that, and it's going to be impressive as we get her on the line. One last announcement. John Radcliffe, a Freemason, is going to be joining us next week. I know I just did an interview with Greg Stewart, who was a Freemason. John Radcliffe emailed me after the first interview I did with him, basically offering him his time to basically elaborate on some of the things that Greg Stewart said, because they have some differences in opinions about what Freemasonry is about. And I think it was the title of the post was "Esoteric Freemasons and Conspiracy Nuts Are Driving Me to Distraction." So okay, I said, I have my views on Freemasonry. Greg has his views on Freemasonry, and this is obviously somebody who comes from a different line of thinking. And so we're going to have him on the show to basically explain his perspective on things. I'm going to invite you to call in and speak with him and ask any question that you want, just like we did with Greg, and it should be very interesting. So let me see if we got Vicki on the line here. Vicki, are you there?
Yes, I am. I'm here.
Great, great. Nice to have you on the show. So I got this outline you gave me.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to try to run, you know, go as close to it as I can and understanding it. I got to admit, your knowledge far surpasses mine when it comes to this topic. Far. And that's why it's a privilege to have you on the show. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, well, thank you. It's we'll just try to keep it at a high level just to dispel the myth and the disinfo that mm-hmm. is out there, mm-hmm. you know. This whole issue could be a case study in disinfo and propaganda.
Mm-hmm.
So, go ahead, Bill.
Oh, I just wanted to say the way I came across your work was a guy who was in my Ron Paul meetup group that we were, you know, campaigning for Ron Paul. And he was just, he blew my mind with everything that he knew about the NAFTA superhighway. I mean, I talked about it happening. I talked about some of the negative, aspects of it that are on a surface level. But then he started going into this detail, and I was like, dude, how do you know all this stuff? And then I'm trying to put together a nice video basically proving, hopefully, enough documentation to absolutely prove without a doubt that this is actually occurring. And he was going to help me do that, and he gave me a bunch of documentation. And one of them was a paper that you produced, I believe. It's called, forgive me, you have it for download. It's the memory gap of the NAFTA superhighway. And I saw your information on there, and I hop on your site, and my jaw hit the floor. I couldn't believe the detail. So
that paper was actually produced by a friend of mine, Deborah Niwa. Mm-hmm. I contributed a little bit to it, but she is the one that produced that. Actually, there's kind of a group of us that kind of work independently, but together on some things sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so we've kind of all worked on this project at different times, collecting all of this information, put it together to give people the information on what this is all about with the NAFTA superhighway. Mm-hmm. Because it's not just about a highway. It's about something so much larger. And it's even bigger than just the not just the merger, but the merger between the U.S., Canada, and Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
There are other issues even beyond that. It's kind of like the NAFTA superhighway is the tip of the iceberg,
right,
so to speak.
Okay. Okay, well, let's go ahead and get into some of the details about it. Now, the first thing, I don't know what an MPO is, but you talked about Transportation Planning and Mobility 2000. Could you expand on what that is exactly? Because when I read that, it's like reading another language.
A Metropolitan Planning Organization is, it's required by law, and it's for communities that have over 50,000 people, and what their function is to be the coordinator between the Federal Highway Department and the local regional planning departments of local governments.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the ones that basically, I believe, control the federal funds. Say how that federal funds are spent in the regional areas. Now, a region is an area that has a population greater than 50,000, but some of the regional organizations are cover areas that are much, much larger than that.
Okay.
And it's so that they produce a coordinated traffic plan for the region,
mm-hmm.
you know, which kind of makes sense, you mm-hmm. know, when you think about it. But anyway, in 1980, somewhere in the mid-80s, Federal Highways Department asked the Dallas Regional Planning Organization to produce a report on their traffic projections. Mm-hmm. And I believe that probably included in that request was to include the what the traffic projections would be if they did build a Pan-American highway. And the reason why I say that is because if you look at their report that was published in 1986, it basically shows a doubling of the vehicle miles traveled between 1980 and 2000.
Hmm.
So out of that, and they were that report that they produced was called Mobility 2000. Well, apparently it shocked all the transportation people. And 2 years after that, a public-private partnership group formed. They also called themselves Mobility 2000. And their purpose was to come together to flesh out the ideas of what you would define as an intelligent highway system.
Okay.
An intelligent vehicle highway system.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically from out of that group. They formalized their organization in 1991 as the first they called themselves the Intelligent Vehicle Highway Program. But in 1994, they changed it to the Intelligent Transportation System with an acronym of ITS. And that's where you get the term superhighway. A superhighway is a fully automated smart highway where vehicles communicate with the road, so to speak, and data is collected on everything that moves on that highway. So that's where you get the term superhighway. And this group started out as Mobility 2000. When they formalized into an organization, at the DOT's request, they produced a strategic plan for the U.S. transportation system.
Mm-hmm.
For the entire U.S. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Concurrent with their producing this strategic plan, the legislation, the ICE-T Act of 1991, was written, and I do believe it was done concurrently. Because the Intelligent Vehicle Highway System Strategic Plan was published in 1992, and the Intermodal Surface Transportation Efficiency Act of 1991, now that's ICE-T, was passed just before 1991, so it was kind of concurrent. And in the ICE-T legislation, what they did was that they declared the Dwight David Eisenhower interstate system complete, finished, done with. They defined a new highway system called the National Highway System. Okay, the National Highway System included not only the interstate, but also the feeder routes leading to principal arterials and highways, including toll facilities, ports, highways, transportation facilities, and other intermodal transportation facilities.
Okay.
Stop me! You don't understand what I'm saying.
I'm hanging in there.
Okay.
It's just it's all these. The thing is that's really elusive about this whole thing, and this is, I think, why they're able to manipulate the information and data coming out to the public, is because they use these terms like intermodal. Like, I've never heard the word intermodal used in my entire life, and I'm assuming that intermodal means moving within a certain parameter, right? Is that what basically intermodal means, or?
No, what intermodal means is more than one mode of transportation on one trip.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Gotcha.
For example, if you're shipping something from China over to the United to a Walmart warehouse, you're going to have the ship that, you know, brings it across the ocean. You're going to load the containers probably on a train.
Mm-hmm.
The train will bring it up to, right now I think it probably might bring it to the border, and then you have to then load it on trucks, and the trucks take it to a warehouse. So you've got three modes of transportation in a single journey.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's what intermodal means.
Okay, gotcha.
The word corridor is also important in this.
Okay.
Okay, here's the definition of a corridor. A combination of modes that move people, vehicle, and goods from one location to another. In general, a transportation corridor is not just one road or rail line, but a combination of modes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now if you know what the original definition of was of the Trans-Texas Corridor, which NASCO was trying to deny, it included, it was like three football fields wide, included several train tracks, it included truck, several lanes of truck traffic,
mm-hmm.
and several lanes of highway traffic. It included pipelines for gas and electric, or gas and oil or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It included fiber optic cable and electric. And so that's what qualifies it as a corridor, as opposed to just a regular highway.
Gotcha. Okay. And that's where whole concept of the superhighway comes in, too, right? I mean, what you said earlier was that a superhighway is basically a combination of all of these things along in the same highway system, right?
Well, superhighway refers to the smart technology built into the highway.
Mm-hmm.
Corridor refers to the multiple modes of things that are transportation elements that run along the same path.
Okay.
So you would have rail, truck, car, pipelines, utilities. Those mm-hmm. are all what constitute a corridor. But you're right about the language. They play with the language to be able to deny what is actually happening. So you have to really pay attention to the language that they use,
mm-hmm.
and in the context that they use it.
Right. That's what I was tripping out on, because I would listen to them on the news and stuff, and people would hit them up about things, you know, and you would hear them toy around with the words. It's not a superhighway. It's not a NAFTA highway. It's a corridor. It's an expansion of the already existing highways and blah, blah, blah. You know what I'm saying? And they would say, they keep saying that there's partial truth to it, but the rest of it is a conspiracy theory. You know, and it's frustrating.
Right.
Nonetheless, you know, and I think to myself, like, I know what the overall agenda is, and I can almost pretty much guess that anything that goes in that direction is part of the agenda for creating a North American Union and regionalizing the world to be fit with the United Nations. You know, I already knew that, and I know that the average person that you talk to, especially when I talk to people who've never really understood any of this stuff, it's their first time being exposed to it, and they hear this superhighway thing, and then they hear all these, you know, key terms like intermodal and stuff. I mean, it just goes right over their head. You know, they just don't get it. And that's the most difficult aspect of it.
There's not many people that would sit down and read transportation legislation. And I wouldn't have done it myself. I mean, it would not have, never would have been my choice of things to do.
Right, right.
But
got you into studying this out of curiosity real quick? What got you reading those transcripts and trying to figure this all out?
Oh, well, I've been working on the North American Union because I, you know, figured out a while back that the free trade area of the Americas was actually while they call it free trade, it's supposed to be the seamless movement of people and goods across borders.
Right.
But concurrent with that, underneath that is an administrative merger of our governments. in order to do that seamless integration. Okay, so since I'm a computer systems analyst, I look at everything from the point of view of the computer systems and what are they doing with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they can say whatever they want to, you know, in words, but it's the underlying administrative merger that is makes it what it is, you know, which is the merger of our governments, basically.
Right. Right. Now, do you think that this is just basically setting up the infrastructure? I guess the part that I don't understand about all this is how is this going to bring about that goal for them? I mean, I understand that this is going to be quite a merging of the economies, is it not? I mean, if we're basically, sharing highway systems and the shipment of goods and services with other countries and trade, this is going to affect Canada, the United States, and Mexico as one unit, is it not?
Yes, yes. You can't have sovereignty if you are merged, integrated with other countries.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just by definition.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you're harmonizing your regulations and your computer systems are integrated, and I can get you a list of about half a dozen computer systems that are international systems that used to be national, but they are now international, meaning that they aggregate the data between Mexico and Canada and the United States.
Now, and this is in large portion. I've touched on this a little bit in a previous show. You talked about the non-governmental organizations and the public-private partnerships. Just for the sake of understanding what that means, could you kind of elaborate on that a little bit and how that
the
affects this whole
private?
Yeah,
public-private partnerships. Well, that's where you get into, well, it's fascism, that's what it is, pure and simple. And the way that they use these public-private partnerships, it's basically private entities that they call stakeholders working with directly with government and, supposedly they work in partnership to make things better, but the problem, to make things workable for the way that they decide it should be for the 21st century. So basically, they're eliminating the old paradigm and bringing in the new paradigm. Getting information from the stakeholders, but the problem is who are the stakeholders?
Right.
You know, they have the trucking company in this NAFTA superhighway thing. They have the trucking companies as stakeholders. They have the state departments of transportation as stakeholders. All these technology companies are stakeholders. The only people that aren't stakeholders are the people in Texas who own homes that are in the path of this that are going to lose their homes. They were not considered in this cozy little partnership that, you know, they had going with to design this highway system.
Right, right. And, you know, and largely for a supposed free society where the people get to vote on the future of our country, there's been literally no legislation on this, has there?
For public-private partnerships?
Right.
Well, I can't say that for sure, because during the Clinton administration, they basically redefined our government, reinvention of government. And I'm not sure how much of that was coded into law, or how much of it just came from the executive branch using their power of management over the administrative departments of government to basically reorganize the government. But I do know that in these relationships there is a lot of corruption. You know, it used to be, back in the old days, even the appearance of impropriety was not allowed. Nowadays, it's just open corruption.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the whole partnership concept of government partnering with corporations, it's antithetical to the function of government.
Right.
Government is supposed to regulate corporations. You can't be a partner with somebody that's going to regulate you.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, okay. Yeah, I know we're getting a little off track here.
Yeah, we kind of got off track there. But
do you want to go ahead
Well, let me...
Go ahead.
I was going to say, okay, so we took care of the superhighway part of the NAFTA superhighway.
Okay.
Now let's look at the NAFTA part of it and mm-hmm. how that got in there. In the 1991 strategic report, first of all, I don't know if you know this or not, but the NAFTA agreement was negotiated during the Bush 1 administration,
mm-hmm.
and it was basically ready to sign by the time that Clinton took office. And so they were working out the details during Bush 1. And this strategic report, the Intelligent Vehicle Highway System strategic plan, bears that out, because right on page I-15 it says, efforts underway to create a North American IBHS program are consistent with recent developments towards increased economic cooperation between the U.S., Canada, and Mexico.
Mm.
Okay, so it was always intended to be international.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now in the ICE-T legislation, they kind of split up what they did, which is one of their strategies with legislation. They will put a piece of it in one year and another piece in another year and another piece in another year, so that you really have to go through a lot of legislation
mm-hmm.
and reconstruct to find out what it is that they're doing with things. And that's what they did with the international aspect of this highway system.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, in the 1991, the ICE-T Act, they included, let me see if I can find this real quick. Well, they referenced the fact that they were going to do a study, or that it was interstate or interregional. Oh, here it is, okay. The purpose of the National Highway System is to provide an interconnected system of principal arterial routes which will serve major population centers, international border crossings, ports, airports, public transportation facilities, and other intermodal transportation facilities and major travel destinations, meet national defense requirements, and serve interstate and interregional travel. Okay, well, interregional travel, by definition, would be cross borders.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that was in the 1991
mm-hmm.
legislation. Now, what they did, they didn't, by defining this new highway system and declaring the interstate system complete,
mm-hmm.
they had to come up with a new naming scheme to identify the corridors that were going to be the priority corridors.
Okay.
Okay. So that's why in the 1991 legislation, they didn't know which ones they were going to be at the time. They just said, 2 years from now, you must name the priority corridors that are going to get the most attention in this new highway system.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so in the 1995 National Highway System Designation Act, that's when they named the high priority corridors, one of which was the Canamex corridor,
mm-hmm.
which goes from Nogales up to the Canadian border, And the other one was Interstate Route 35 corridor from Laredo up to Minnesota, up to the it doesn't say to the Canadian border, but that's where it goes, is to the Canadian border.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the reason why we know it's the Interstate 35 that was called the NAFTA Superhighway,
mm-hmm.
Because in a hearing on March 10th, 1995, and this is in the congressional record, Congressman Jaron, I think his name is Pete Jaron, made several statements calling it the NAFTA Superhighway. Okay, he says, this is a quote, "I think this NAFTA superhighway is a very important step in the right direction." Okay, you go farther down, it says, quote, "I urge this committee to give careful consideration to this concept. As this trade grows, the current I-35 won't be able to handle it. It will deteriorate. We won't be able to take advantage of all the imaginative opportunities that the superhighway designation can give us." Okay?
Yeah.
On page 690 of this hearing, same hearing,
mm-hmm.
it says, "The designation of I-35 corridor as a superhighway under NAFTA is extraordinarily important to the successful implementation of that agreement." Okay, it doesn't get much more clear than that.
Yeah,
does it?
No, it doesn't.
And that's why that's how it happened to pick up the name NAFTA Superhighway.
Okay.
Even though it was never officially designated or given the name NAFTA Superhighway, that's what it was. And you know the intent by what they're doing. It just happens that the Canamex corridor was named Canamex right from the beginning.
Okay.
But for some reason, they didn't designate it, the I-35 route, as the NAFTA Superhighway.
Mm-hmm.
I believe now it's called the NASCO corridor.
NASCO, that's right.
Yeah. So, and I don't know if that's an official designation that's coded into law or not. But that's what they're calling it now.
So, not to take it off track here, but what pops in my mind, okay, is that thinking this far back, you know, you're talking about 1995, with Pete Tarin, who's speaking in a congressional hearing and using the term NAFTA Superhighway, talking about designations, things like this. What was in their head as a motivation to do this? You know, like, I don't understand. It's because this is going to be way, way in the future. Why was it at that time that so many people were working towards the same objective here, you know, so many years later? Did they really have it? Were they deceived in thinking that this is going to be the best for us because it's going to improve, you know, our economy by allowing goods coming in from China and stuff? Or, I mean, what was going through their head?
Well, I think they were duped mm-hmm. into thinking that by opening up this corridor, it would allow greater access to the Mexican markets for U.S. goods. But what they failed to consider is the difference in wages. I mean, you know,
right,
it's not difficult to figure out what a corporation's going to do when you consider that their motivation is the highest profit.
Right.
So if you remove all barriers between a high-wage country and a low-wage country, corporations are just going to move to the low-wage country, especially if they can then re-import back into the high-wage country.
Exactly.
Right?
Yes.
Because they can charge high-dollar prices in a high-wage country while paying the lowest possible price.
Right.
For the goods to be manufactured for the highest overall profit.
Yeah. I mean, and considering that's pretty much already going on, it's just going to increase what's already a bad situation. I mean, because I'm thinking...
Oh, yeah, it's what's crashing the global economy, because it can't... Obviously, you know, it's like a dam. If you poke a hole in the dam, all the water rushes out. Well, pretty soon there's not going to be any more water in the dam. It's going to be all gone.
Right.
And that's what's happening to our economy. Mm-hmm. All of the productive aspects of an economy, things that you produce that you can sell on a global market, they're all being produced in low-wage countries.
Right.
And even the knowledge jobs that can be done on a computer, those have been exported too over to India.
Right, right.
Where they, but you notice your insurance hasn't gone down.
Yeah.
So the difference in price, the difference in their costs, the corporate costs, between having their administrative work done in India and their production done in China has all gone to profit and for them. And that's why you see CEO wages skyrocketing.
Right.
Just, you know, going through the roof. I remember one year, I don't know whether it was 2001 or 2002, somewhere around there, where corporate profits had gone up like 166% in one year. So...
Oh, man.
Yeah, and the thing is that, you know, what are they leaving us as an economy?
Mm-hmm.
With no knowledge jobs.
I mean, it just seems like it's such common sense. I can't imagine that the people who are really pushing for this have no clue what they're doing. I mean, it almost seems like I would, and not to sound too conspiratorial, but I would think that it might be on purpose. Like, they're purposely trying to bankrupt our economy.
Yeah.
Would that be a little bit extreme?
No.
Because it seems like such common sense.
But you've got to do a whole lot of research to be able to prove it.
Right.
But yes, that's what I think the goal is. Ultimately, to dissolve our nation, create the region, the continental regional governance structure, and basically go back to a feudal system, you know, where people are basically slaves.
Wow. Okay, so...
And I have documentation for all of that. I could, you know...
I would definitely like to get into
the... If we were in a room together, I could prove it to you.
Yeah. I'm going to give tons of links on attached to this show. I record this and I podcast it, so people can go to the website and give me a couple days to get it all on there. But I'm going to put tons of links on there for people to do the research and check on these things themselves, because I always encourage that. In this day and age, it's important that we stop listening to what people tell you and actually do the research yourself. Because if, you know, in the same mentality, even though I know that Vicky's telling the truth here, there is definitely a lot of people out there who are not telling the truth. And you need to get past the mentality, the sheep herded mentality of listening to what people say and taking the time to research and verify the facts. And that's something that I promote on my show constantly, because I don't want to be responsible for people's, you know, opinions and beliefs. I just want to give them information and let them draw their own conclusions. But I'm going to go to a song right now.
I agree with you.
Okay, I'm going to go to a song right now just for a quick break, and then we'll come back here in just a second with Vicky Davis. This song I found on MySpace, this group called The War Against Sleep, which, you know, coincidentally happens to go with somewhat of the topic that we're talking about. The song is called Patriot Act. Give it a listen, and we'll be back in just a second.
We need an energy bill that encourages consumption.
Listen, this nation is committed to dealing with poverty. First, let me make it very clear, poor people aren't necessarily killers. Just because
you talking about to us.
To those who scare peace-loving people with phantoms of lost liberty, my message is this.
Revere Radio Network Tampa, the worldwide home of free speech.
Okay, we're back. And that is a song by the War Against Sleep. It's called Patriot Act. You can get more information about War Against Sleep on myspace.com/War Against Sleep. Check out their music. It's awesome. I came across that and I was like, wow, that's really good. I dug it. So thanks, guys, for letting me put that on the show. And hopefully, if you guys have some time, go check out their other stuff. Okay, so I'm going to bring Vicki Davis back on the line. You there, Vicki?
Yep, I'm here.
Okay, wonderful. So I had a question during that little break from somebody who wanted me to ask you about the legislation that's being brought against this agenda.
What do you mean, like the resolutions that are opposing it?
Right.
I think, well, the resolutions that are passed in the states are really not binding, mm-hmm. but they are a communication to federal elected officials, members of Congress, telling them that this is what we as state legislators think and how you should vote on these issues when they come up.
Okay.
So they're important. It's kind of like a sense of the Congress, but it's a sense of the state legislature,
mm-hmm.
and communication to the federal representatives in Congress. So they're important, but they're not binding.
Okay. Gotcha. So,
uh-huh.
so I mean, we'll get to this in a little bit, but I want to come back by the end to find out what we can do to try to stop this thing. You know, like you said, I mean, if they're passing this stuff and it's not binding, and therefore it's pretty much worthless. I mean, would you say that? I mean, they're basically telling them, they're making a public statement that they're against it, but it doesn't do anything. Is that fair?
Well, but it's not. I wouldn't say that it's worthless. Mm-hmm. But what I would say is that we as citizens have to understand what it is that's being done, so that when we do talk to our representatives, be they state or federal, that they can't do this tap dance of there is no such thing as a NAFTA superhighway, and it's conspiracy theory and all of this. You have to go talk to them as an informed citizen and let them know that you know what's being done.
Mm-hmm.
And this game of language, of semantics and phrasing or framing of questions so that they can basically propagate disinformation,
mm-hmm.
isn't going to fly, because you know what the truth is.
Right.
So we've got to, well, you know, for the state legislators that have done these resolutions, we have to back them up, support them in every way that we can, and push on the members of Congress and to get this stopped.
So. Okay. Now, I'm looking at your outline here, and you wanted to go to the way centered around transportation systems and sustainable development, and the new economy aspect of this. Could you explain?
But first, before I do that, though,
okay.
I want to get into the international aspects of the NAFTA Super Corridor, because it's kind of a lead-in to the to what is actually a global transportation system.
Okay.
Now, going back to what I said about how they split up pieces of legislation from one year to the next, so that you don't really know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
In 1991, under the heading of National Defense Highways located outside of the United States, the ICT legislation gives permission to the Secretary of Defense that after okay, reconstruction projects, if the secretary determines after consultation with the Secretary of Defense that a highway or portion of a highway located outside the United States is important to the national defense, the secretary may carry out a project for the reconstruction of such highway or portion of highway. Okay, so that gave them permission to build outside of the United States using U.S. taxpayer dollars.
Interesting.
In the 1995 legislation, under miscellaneous studies, there's a section called Pan American Highway.
Okay.
And it says the secretary shall conduct a study on the adequacy and the need for improvements to the Pan American Highway. And the elements shall include the benefits of constructing a highway at the Darien Gap, Panama, and Colombia. Okay, so that's where there's another project, like the Super Corridor or the NAFTA Superhighway project, going on from Panama up through Mexico and then down into South America. It's called Plan Puebla. And it is also a superhighway in that it has all of the technology, and that will ultimately become the Pan American Highway that connects the whole North and South America, American continents.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's what I meant when I said that the NAFTA Superhighway is just the tip of the iceberg.
That's mind-boggling, because you keep hearing about the NAFTA Superhighway. I never even knew that there was the plan for a Pan American Highway. That's interesting.
Yeah. I don't know. My feeling is that they've kind of made the NAFTA Superhighway an issue to draw attention away from all the rest of what's going on with this global transportation system.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know the whole issue going on with contaminated produce coming into the United States. Lead toys and poison drugs coming from China and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that all actually ties into this transportation system. And what the idea is, because this truly is a global system, their idea is to track a product at its origin, clear through to the destination.
Mm-hmm.
And when you hear Mike Leavitt talk about it, he's the Secretary of HHS, he's always talking about tracking food from the farm to the plate, you know, from the fields to your plate.
Right.
When the FDA is talking about it, they're talking about regulating drug production, monitoring drug production from the factory that produces it, clear to the where it's in the pharmacy delivered to the patient.
Wow.
Okay, it's all part of the same system. It's all part of tracking anything that moves from or wherever it moves from. You know, wherever the product moves from to wherever it is moving to.
Right, and I'm sure that includes coming, you know, right into your house.
Well, it does, because with RFID chipped inventory tags and so forth, it's... Yeah, they basically will have a record of everything that moves, and hand to hand, who got it when and where. But the thing is that with the drug system, it will never work.
Uh-huh.
It just simply won't work, because so our drugs coming from China will never be safe, no matter what they say.
Right.
And the reason why is because you've got ingredients coming from different places in the world, and the factory just puts them together. And any one of the ingredients in a drug can be poison. So even if you have an inspector in a Chinese plant, that's not going to guarantee the safety of a drug that's manufactured there.
Right, right.
You would have to have
Some kind of safety inspection, right?
Everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, it's insane. I mean, it's too insane to even consider.
Right.
But that shows you the level of insanity of what's going on at the global level with the idea of these global systems.
Right. And what I find fascinating about the whole thing is that they keep using these excuses, you know, like, oh, you know, we have bad stuff coming in, so we need more of this and more of that and bigger highways, and we need to bring in more merchandise. We need, you know what I'm saying? And By instinct, the common sense person would say, no, what we need to do is stop taking crap from China. We need to bring some of the stuff home so we can have our own regulators look into things. And you know what I'm saying? And they're always like, no, that's just not something we can consider. That's too primitive. That's old school America. We got a new America coming, you know? And they keep pushing this agenda. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, well, that shows you the evil genius of marketing.
Yeah.
You know, when you've heard the old saying, you know, that guy could sell ice to the Eskimos.
Right.
Well,
yeah.
Well, it's the same principle with what's going on here. You know, they're turning common sense on its head and telling you that if you don't see it, it's because you're either not smart enough, or you know, you're not well educated enough.
Right.
Or, you know, there's something wrong with you if you can't see how really great this is. And you know, you're looking at it from a common sense perspective, and you're saying, "But this doesn't make sense."
Right.
You know, what are you talking about? But you know what? When you indoctrinate people, you know, along a certain way of thinking, and you bring them along step by step,
mm-hmm.
and they are at a real deep level into things, they tend not to be able to rise above and take a look. I don't. I'm sure I'm not explaining that very, very clearly. But with free trade,
mm-hmm.
you know, all of the economists that promote free trade, they're just absolutely certain that a great global economy is going to be created, and that it's going to lift people out of poverty, and everything is going to be all wonderful.
Right, right.
The thing
all
is,
the time.
Is that the thing is that over in China, they pay people 50 cents an hour. They have 1.5 billion people,
mm-hmm.
and there are nearly 1.5 billion people in India. Well, you know, we've got 300 million people in this country. The only way we can't ever compete on wages with those countries.
Mm-hmm.
We can never reach equilibrium. We've got to drop, in order to even hope, we'd have to drop our wages down to their level,
mm-hmm.
and increase our population to their level.
Right.
To have it all
balanced out.
You know, yeah, to reach equilibrium.
That's very interesting. You know, I'm a person who believes in free trade, but I don't think we really have what's considered to be free trade. I mean, it seems like as they keep pushing this, they ride the idealism of free trade globally. Oh yeah, we're just expanding free trade. But in reality, what they're doing is they're pocketing more and more of the power into the hands of just a few corporations, exactly the opposite effect of what free trade is. But yet they espouse free trade as like the reasoning behind this, because, you know, there is some valid logic behind free trade that says that, you know, all these things will take care of themselves. But I mean, that's not taking into account a lot of things, like the fact that we have a central bank, the fact that, you know, we're dealing with communist countries and we're letting our, you know, labor be exported. This is not really what free trade had in mind. It's not to mention the legislation that isolates the power down and requires licensing for everything. And you know what I'm saying? It's quite the opposite.
Yeah. Well, free trade in theory doesn't, I mean, if you only think in theory, you know, where you have company A trading with company B, it might sound good, but free trade is something that never was and never could be.
Mm-hmm.
Because what we have now is free trade with China, and what are they doing? China is importing lead-painted toys, they're importing poisoned drugs.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what free trade gets you.
Right.
You know, they're free to import. Now, if you look at NAFTA Chapter 11, NAFTA Chapter 11 is investor rights.
Mm-hmm.
And what that says is that if a foreign corporation wants to do business in the United States, mm-hmm. but there are barriers in the United States, either safety or environment, health, well, you know, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter what the barrier is. Under the FTA, under the WTO rules, that foreign corporation can sue, and either we have to eliminate our laws or we have to pay them off.
Mm-hmm.
So I call it the blackmail government provision. Because that's
sounds appropriate.
Because that's exactly what happened to California with a chemical that's put into gasoline. I think it's called MPE.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, well, a foreign corporation sued, and California had to give up their environmental regulation prohibiting the use of that additive to gasoline.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but it gets even more insidious. That, you know, the trucks coming across the border from Mexico.
Right.
You know that Mexican trucking standards are nowhere near ours.
Right.
But Vicente Fox sued under the WTO rules. The case went to the NAFTA tribunal, which is a kangaroo court, and the they found in favor of Vicente Fox and Mexico, saying we had to let these trucks cross the border or pay them off. I mean, it's just
outrageous.
I hear free trade,
uh-huh.
That's what I think of. These agreements, they're not free trade.
Right.
They're written in such a way that to break down our laws, to break
exactly.
down barriers.
That's what I was just going to say. It just seems so obvious that the they don't want to pay them off. They just want to have an excuse for deregulating different aspects, you know, and allowing for their agenda to come about more. You know what I'm saying? That's what it seems like. I mean, obviously, that's legislation that's just set up to fail. You know?
Yeah. Well, fail from our point of view, but from a multinational corporation's point of view, you know, it's the greatest thing that ever happened in the history of the world.
Yeah.
And all you have to do is look at their paychecks, the CEO paychecks, to know it.
No doubt. Okay, we're taking calls.
Yeah.
If anybody would like to call in and speak with Vicki Davis, the number is 1-877-REVERE-0. That's 1-877-738-3730. And we'll get you on the air with Vicki. So go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. I just want to make sure that people know they have the opportunity to call in and ask questions.
Oh, okay. All right. Now, continuing on with how this global trading system is working. If you imagine yourself being in a satellite looking down on the continent of the United States, or not the continent of North America and South America,
mm-hmm.
and you design a transportation system with no other factors in mind, just the most efficient movement of goods from point to point.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they've done with this global transportation system.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to accommodate the borders, they have this is a smart highway system. So they supposedly have it all centers around technology, but they have this trusted shipper program.
Okay.
Because they want to move goods fast with no barriers.
Right.
So they have this alleged trusted shipper program that basically says if you register with the Department of Home Scam Security, we will consider you a trusted shipper and you can just ship your goods right straight on across the border.
Mm-hmm.
And where you're going to ship them to is to something called an inland port. That's what the Kansas City Smart Port is. It's an inland port.
Okay.
And it's an intermodal commerce zone because it's like a hub where you have multiple modes of transportation that all come together. And in combination with that, you have the economic development zones. I do believe, I haven't found this in print yet, but I think that the intermodal commerce zones and the economic development zones are one and the same thing.
Okay. Wow.
Okay. But when you talk about economic development zones, then you're getting into another whole big area that involves education and just all kinds of stuff, which is basically Agenda 21,
mm-hmm.
which is the UN, the mm-hmm. UN Agenda 21,
mm-hmm.
and one of the provisions in Agenda 21 is human settlements.
That's right. I'm so glad you're getting into this, because this is very much the reasoning behind the whole thing, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, people move where the jobs are, right?
Right.
So by defining these economic development zones, they are creating jobs in those zones to force the people to move there. Now, those economic development zones, intermodal commerce zones, will also put other businesses out of business. And the reason why is because these intermodal commerce zones are being defined with trade preferences, or not trade, tax benefits. Okay, if mm-hmm. your business resides in an intermodal commerce zone, then you don't have to pay the same kind of taxes that a business outside the zone has to pay.
Okay. Is that exemption? Is that basically what you're saying, is it a tax exemption?
Yes. Yes.
and I bet they have a pretty good idea who's going to be in those zones, right?
Well, whoever runs the zone, okay, now here's where we get back to the public-private partnership things. Whoever is running the zone, which is a public-private partnership, they can decide who gets to do business in their zone. So they've set them up as kind of an island unto themselves,
mm-hmm.
exempt from all of the regulations and taxes and everything else that other businesses have to follow. Now, the reason why I started noticing this was because of a debate I heard between two men in Minnesota,
mm-hmm.
a debate for the governorship of Minnesota. And one of the issues that came up was that there's an intermodal commerce zone where a cement company located in the zone moved in. It was a new company moved in the zone. And that company was putting a cement company that had been in business for 20 years outside of the zone. They were putting him out of business.
Mm-hmm.
Because he couldn't compete on price because of the tax exemption.
Uh-huh.
You see?
Yeah.
It's so insidious. It's so
it's just control over every aspect of economy. I mean, they're literally getting a grip over the way it travels, where it comes from, who's going to get it, everything. I mean, there's nothing free trade about it.
Right, and nothing capitalist about it either.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the way they are moving us from a true capitalist economy to a centrally planned economy.
Right, it's a form of socialism.
Now when all economic activity is has to be in one of these zones in order to compete, then, you know, once you're in the zone, if you're invited into the zone, then they're basically controlling your business.
Right.
You know, whether or not you think you manage your business, it's you don't really.
Right.
They're basically controlling your business.
You're just doing the work for them.
You're doing the work for them. That's right.
That's right. This is just it's so ridiculous that this is going on and has been going on for such a long period of time. And you know, I mean, who's, and there's no media is covering, giving any fair coverage to anything covering this stuff.
The media in this country is a propaganda arm. You can't. I would tell everybody that, you know, just turn off your TV because it's propaganda. And even some programs that don't seem to be propaganda on a few issues, they are promoting part of the agenda, just not the whole agenda.
Right.
And that's the way things are divided here. You know, you've got, there's a great quote by a guy named Paul Proctor. He's something about socialism needs two legs. It's the left and the right. I don't know, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But so issues are divided up in such a way that so that, you know, they make progress on one while they're railing against another. But it doesn't matter if they're railing against another because the government is doing what it's going to do anyway.
Right.
So.
So let's get into.
Yeah,
the
our media is. I call it American Pravda because that's.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah, no doubt, and you know they're even trying hard now to kind of get a chokehold on the internet, which is a subject we're going to be covering here really soon. Because actually, for a little while here, we actually have freedom for once to talk about things like this and get it out to the people. For those who are tech savvy enough to know how to navigate around the net. And it's been a wonderful resource for spreading, you know, getting out there the truth about what's going on. And they're working diligently to try to take it out. And they're going to reintroduce, they call it Internet 2, where they can basically control what sites you get on, which ones you don't, all kinds of mm-hmm. stuff. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, actually, there are a number of different strategies that they're going to be using. One of them is through the copyright laws. You know, whereas if you have a link to another website, you know, it can be construed as violation of copyright. Another one is the two-tier service. You mm-hmm. know, where you have the high-speed lane
right.
and then the low speed. And that will kill independent media.
Right.
So, yeah, that's one of the most, that really is one of the most important issues that we have to watch because, you know, all these other issues aside, if we can't communicate with each other, if I can't, you know, tell you what I found, or you can't tell your audience what you found, then, we're doomed.
Yeah, yeah. That's exactly true. And that's and now I want to take this opportunity, I've mentioned this at the beginning of the broadcast, to donate to Revere Radio. I mean, look, guys, we need to get information out to the people as quickly as possible. There's very few resources right now. I mean, there's a million websites out there, but, you know, honestly, people read websites about as much as they read books, which isn't very much.
Well,
and we need other outlets and sources of information to get to people. So please donate to Revere Radio. Go to revereradio.net and hit on the donate chip in. Actually, it's a little chip in box if you could do that. I'd appreciate it. But we're going to be, you know, we're kind of running out of time here. We got about 30 minutes. I would like to, if you can, make sure that you cover most of the major stuff that you think is the most important to understand and hopefully what we can do as citizens, you know, to get active and stop this. And honestly, do you think it's something that we can stop?
I think if people, first, they have to understand that they have to get together in groups. I mean, the Ron Paul people have just been fantastic. You know, whether you agree or disagree with Ron Paul's positions, nobody would argue the point that the organization that was built around opposition to mainstream politics has just been phenomenal.
Absolutely.
And so they I think they've shaken up the Well, I know they have the Republican Party, for sure.
And they're not done. I mean, even locally, we have several people who have gotten on the, I forget what they call it, but it's like a board of people on the Republican parties, the local Republican Party. And they're sitting, they're Ron Paul supporters, and they're sitting there now active in the Republican Party, and they have the full intention of changing things. And we're involved.
Yeah, well, and I know in several other states, the Republican Party apparatchiks, or whatever you call them, have blocked the Ron Paul people from participating.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not a democratic process.
It's sad that they don't even really, it doesn't even hit them that it's something that they, you know what I'm saying, that you would think that there would be enough integrity in the people, enough belief in, if they're involved in politics, especially Republicanism, which has kind of heralded itself as kind of like, you know, the free market, democratic Republican process, you know what I'm saying, you know, the people have the right to vote type of thing. They've, you know, they always preach it, but when it comes down to it, you know, that I've seen some pretty crooked things going on in the party. It's not like they're not holding these things to be too valuable, you know.
Sometimes I think that integrity is dead in this country. The country has turned into a kleptocracy. It's being transformed into a fascist nation. I mean, you know, when you have corporations partnering with government, basically it's the corporations using the power of the government to extract money, and it's your tax dollars that they're getting. Mm-hmm. And they're also getting regulations that benefit them and enslave you.
Right.
So, I mean, just the idea of a partnership between a profit-making corporation and government, mm-hmm. Should anybody that has any sense at all, any brains at all, any sense of history at all, would know that it's fascism.
Right. Absolutely. It is
no
fascism.
Longer. It's not self-government. It's not the traditional American form of government. It's corruption.
Even more so, the fascism that we're looking at now is one that has never really existed in history, where it's not really the government per se that runs the, you know, everything, but the government working on behalf of the corporations, which is kind of a little different than previous forms of fascism, where the government was basically the all-seeing, you know, the strong arm of everything. You know, maybe it's operating more or less as a piece of the economic agenda rather than being the economic agenda. You know what I'm saying? That's what it just appears to be.
Well, you should look into Third Way.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that. What is it called?
Third Way.
Third Way, okay.
Yeah, it's kind of like a cross between the communism of Russia, the fascism of Mussolini's fascism. It's a third way, but mm-hmm. it came, at least as far as my research has gone on it, it came out of the Social Democrats Party over in Europe. Now, social democrats are socialists.
Right.
But they've given themselves the name social democrats. Mm-hmm. See, when the agenda is exposed, they just, you know, give it a new name.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's why you have to follow the history so you can see, you know, where in history did they change the terminology or change the name or...
it's funny too,
so
because
you can know who they are.
Yeah, I mean, that whenever somebody, you know, whenever one of these agendas get exposed, all they do is they change the name, and they actually, the funny thing is, they always preach the opposite of what they're trying to produce. You know, if they're trying to create a fascist form of government, it's going to be a freer government. You know, we're not like, you know, isolating power to the corporations. What we're doing is we're loosening up the borders for freedom and flow. You know what I'm saying? It's like,
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's something that's really amazing about the Cato Institute. Now, the Cato Institute has all these people, and they're always promoting freedom, freedom, freedom. Well, they make it sound like it's freedom for the individuals, but it's not. It's freedom for the corporation.
Right, yes.
And so they get all these individuals out here saying, I want to be free, I want to be free. Free of government, free of this, free of that.
Right.
Well, yeah, you're going to be free. You're going to be free to starve in the dark by yourself, or free to be enslaved by a corporation. That's going to be your freedom.
Exactly. I played a song at the very beginning of the show, and it basically says has George Carlin on there saying, "You know, you're free to do what we tell you." You know.
That's right. Yeah, I love it when they say things like, you know, the. I don't know how much you followed the human slavery, but there's when they included the free movement of people across borders in the WTO agreements, basically that's modern day slave trade.
Yes. Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
And if you look at the human trafficking, mm-hmm. the incidence of human trafficking has gone way, way up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, these Cato-like people, they say, well, you know, the people that were imported from India to work over in Iraq, they're free to leave any time that they want to. Well, yeah, except that, you know, they had to pay a lot of money to get over there. They had to, you know, basically put together a huge, they bought the job is what they did.
Right.
And if they don't have the money to fly back, you can say that they're free, but they're not free.
Right, and it's like, the funny thing is, it's this idea that they're getting something, like if they go back, they're going to get something better. You know, like at least they're able maybe perhaps to feed themselves a decent amount of food compared to going back and not feeding themselves. I mean, they create these economic, you know, catastrophes, and then their solution is, you know, oh, we just enslave them and see, then they can, you know, make a little bit of money and be able to feed themselves versus not making money when it's all their fault to begin with. You know, it's such a manipulation of thinking. It blows me away. I always refer to it as trading the chains for handcuffs. You know, it's a little bit more comfortable, but you're still a slave. You know, it doesn't make a difference if it, you know, if you really think of it in its whole, what it actually represents, it's still slavery.
Yeah, well, the thing that people that those people don't seem to be able to do is to think about it in the context of those people's lives.
Right.
You know, what are the conditions that drove them to take that job, to buy that job to begin with, and what would happen to them if they did leave it? You know, what would happen to their families and all of that? And then you evaluate whether it's voluntary or involuntary on the basis of those facts. Not your own personal facts that, you know, where you've got you live in the United States, you have a big bank account, and you can, you know, tell an employer to, you know, take this job and shove it if you want to.
Right.
Because those are not the conditions that these people are working under.
Right. Not only that, I mean, I remember seeing video of some of these places. I mean, they're surrounded with goons, you know, with guns and stuff. It's not like, you know, your typical job where you're kind of, you know, if you wanted to walk out, you could walk out. I mean,
right.
Some of these people die protesting these people. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's people literally being murdered in protest of the conditions they work in. It's not the same as what I think America perceives it as.
That's exactly right. And for this whole global system, you see, it's not just the transportation system that is global. They are all the systems are going global. And that means there was a new term I saw today, or a friend told me about. It's called the dossier. The government is doing a dossier on you. Well, that's total information awareness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just have chosen to call it a dossier, which includes,
fancy.
You know, your education history, blah, blah, blah. But they're also doing that with your medical records. you know, all this healthcare reform stuff, it's not really about increasing healthcare or the availability of healthcare. It's about creating a national medical records information system. And the reason why you know that is because they're not addressing the profit side of healthcare. That part is just still, you know, hospitals still free to charge you whatever they want. Their idea of healthcare reform is this national medical records system.
Mm-hmm.
And so they'll be able to control if you get regular checkups and whatever, their idea is that they're going to shift the paradigm to have it be a wellness system rather than a sick care system.
Right.
So they'll be spending all kinds of money on healthy people.
Right.
You know, with all these programs to supposedly prevent problems in the future. And basically shuttling off to the side people that are sick,
mm-hmm.
and have them go to chronic managed care facilities.
Right.
I mean, it just, oh boy.
It's scary stuff. It's big time.
It's very scary.
I mean, because you think about what happened in socialism. I mean, the perception was that if you had a disability or a chronic illness, that you were no longer a benefit to society and therefore should be exterminated. I mean, these are the kinds of ideologies that developed in those types of governments, where they just realized, you know, you're going to die anyways. Might as well just, you know, get rid of you now, since you're more of a hindrance on society. You know what I'm saying? And I can see those types of things developing again, that type of ideology. It's frightening. It's seriously frightening. I have a son that was diagnosed with a branch of autism. It's a spectrum disorder, so he's on the mild end of the spectrum, but it's part of the spectrum nonetheless. And I had already had it in my head that I did not want to vaccinate him. But mm-hmm. so much pressure was put on us by other people out of fear. The doctors, I mean, they made it sound like he couldn't get into school, he couldn't do this, he couldn't do that. And they just did. I succumbed to the pressure, and I regret doing it. We only got him one round of vaccinations. And I went and did research and found out that the thimerosal was, in fact, an ingredient in two of the... And I think that might be why he's only mildly autistic versus severely autistic, because we only did it once. You know, and I'm not... I mean, I'm going to get into this in a later show about the connection with thimerosal and the mercury in the vaccinations and different epidemics that are coming about, especially that of autism. But you know, here you got these people. They're this is the kind of stuff that scares me. Say, you know, they're doing a lot to cover up the and I'm not sure if there is for sure. This is in fact where the autism comes from. There's a lot of evidence showing that it may have been. But what we do know is that they're concerned enough about it to cover up as much as they can. I mean, they have the Cato Institute, for example, is doing a lot of articles on how it's just a conspiracy theory. People are paranoid. It's been proven to be okay. All this stuff, you know, you brought up the Cato Institute. I hate them because of the documents that they've put out. And they're one of the major opinion shapers in this whole autism thimerosal debate. And, you know, here you got these companies who are replacing chemicals with really, really bad chemicals to make more money. That's why they did it, to make more money.
Yeah.
Then they're going to use the government to force you to vaccinate your child, regardless of whether or not it hurts them. And then, if you decide you want to do something about that, the propaganda machine comes at work. It starts molding public opinion. They call you conspiracy theorists. The insurance companies don't cover your kid. You know, on and on and on and on and on. And you're basically just given the big middle finger. And no matter what they do to you. You know, and when it comes down to it, the bottom line is they made money. That's what it's all about. You know, and this is just one example of the types of things you can expect from this type of government and this type of control. I mean, it blows me away that people actually get comforted by the government having control of their life. You know, it's quite the truth is quite the opposite.
Yeah, well, government should be regulating corporations, not people.
Right.
Because the whole idea, corporations by definition are a gang. It's multiple people together in an economic endeavor.
Right.
So they're kind of like an economic tank. and they will run over the individual. Well, that's the purpose that government should serve, is to balance the interests between the individual, protecting the individual against the gangs. And now, today, where you have corporations that belong to associations, see, all of our laws on monopolies have basically been set aside under this whole bogus idea of freedom. But that's what I mean. It's freedom for the corporations, not freedom for the individual.
Right, and they're just structuring it for themselves. I mean, like you said, the whole superhighway system is just a way for them to capitalize even further on what they're doing. It has nothing to do with us.
Absolutely nothing. It's not for transportation for people. It's transportation to move goods. But the whole fallacy of it is who's going to be buying those goods, because they've exported all of our jobs. So who's going to have the money to be buying all of these goods 15 years from now, mm-hmm. with the debt of our country? And how they're crushing the economy.
Right.
You know?
And you hear about the Federal Reserve trying to expand its power now. Maybe they're going to create, maybe they figured out some kind of magic formula that will prevent inflation from going through the roof, so they can continue to inflate at a gradual enough speed that we'll never actually have to worry about making money. I don't understand what's going on, or the mentality behind it. It seems, I don't know, from what you're saying, it sounds like you're saying that this is eventually going to fail. Is that pretty good assumption that you're saying that?
Well,
or you think that they're actually going to be able to maintain such of a system? I mean, how are they going to maintain something that's set up to fail, basically, is what I'm asking.
It will fail, but I'm not sure that will stop it.
Right.
I don't think they really care about failure, because their idea is to dissolve nation states.
Right.
And to have the international Comintern control everything from a central point.
Mm-hmm.
That's the importance of understanding that all of these systems that they are developing are global in scope.
Right.
And
this global government that's coming, it's referred to as the New World Order. I was just reading an article today, or I posted an article on my website a couple days ago, but I was reading it today. And talked about it before, when I started the radio show. It talks about preparing the children, preparing unipolar children for a nonpolar world. And I'm not sure if you understand the terminology, but the bipolar world was the Soviet Union and the United States ruling the world. That was considered bipolar. And then the Cold War happened, United States won, now we're unipolar. So the next step is the nonpolar world. You know, it's what do you think of? I mean,
they're
obviously
the
going
for the dissolution of nation states.
And what do you think is the reasoning behind that? And I just kind of want to take it a little step higher there and try to understand the full scope of what this is all about.
Well, I'm still doing research on that, but I can tell you what my impression is, that it goes back to before World War II even, but we'll just start there. And the creation of the United Nations, supposedly as an organization of peace, to bring peace to the world. But embedded in that concept is that their idea is that all of the economies of the world are war economy.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that, them calling it a war economy, because the whole organization of nation states is the reason for war. It's one nation state against another nation state.
Right.
So in order to have peace, nations have to disarm and basically dissolve themselves, and they think that will bring peace.
Right.
And then individuals will be free, you know?
Right, and you don't have to worry about war anymore.
The reality on the ground is that you will be free only long enough for the local neighborhood gang to form.
Right.
And then you will be subjected to the edicts of the local gang. And so, you know, that's why governments formed to begin with. I mean, that's why society's formed.
Mm-hmm.
It's so that people could have the protection of the group. Without protection of the group, however it is that you define the group, people will become victims
mm-hmm.
of other groups. I mean, you know, just take an anthropology 101 class, you know, and follow the development of societies.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the thing that was unique about our government was that our founding documents were written for the protection of the individual, so that the individual could live their lives, you know, be free to live their lives, pursue happiness, without fear of the gang, you know, projecting their will on the individual.
Right. Absolutely.
The communist collectivist system is the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
It's the collective imposing its will on the individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the system that we're moving to, the collectivist system.
Now, this is all basically, you know, like you're talking about the non-governmental organizations and the public-private partnerships that are kind of formulating around an agenda that's being kind of set by the United Nations. The United Nations appears, I'm not sure if it's going to officially be, once it comes about, the world government comes about, but it could potentially be the United Nations. I mean, that's kind of what they're already setting up there. And the United Nations, kind of the idea was formulated around the League of Nations. Is that correct? And, you know, the United Nations is where we get the Agenda 21 and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And the sponsor, the person who paid for this to be founded, was a person by the name of Cecil Rhodes. And I want to read something because it kind of just verifies what you just said about them pretending it's in the best interest of humanity because all the nations are united into one. But this was written in his will, and it's the Cecil Rhodes will basically decided what's going to happen with this money. And a part of that was the Rhodes Scholars, which Clinton belonged to. Clinton was a Rhodes Scholar. And you said he did probably more to destroy our country than any president has in modern history, that's for sure. And towards this global agenda, and I'm just going to read a little piece here just for people to hear this, but to and for the establishment, promotion, and development of a secret society, the true aim and objective whereof shall be for the extension of British rule throughout the world, the perfecting of a system of immigration from the United Kingdom, and of colonization by British subjects of all lands where the means of livelihood are attainable by energy, labor, and enterprise, and especially the occupation by British settlers of the entire continent of Africa, the Holy Land, the Valley of Euphrates, the islands of Cyprus and Candia, the whole of South America, the islands of Pacific, not heretofore possessed by Great Britain, the whole of the Malay Archipelago, I don't know how to say that really well, the seaboard of China and Japan, the ultimate recovery of the United States of America as an integral part of the British Empire, the inauguration of a system of colonial representation in the Imperial Parliament, which may tend to wield together the disjointed members of the Empire, and finally the foundation of so great a power as to render wars impossible and promote the best interest of humanity.
Uh-huh.
Which it sounds all nice and dandy, but the reality is, I mean, this is the real reality. These guys are making sure that they're securing their place and power in this new government. You know.
Right, and it's your enslavement. Your children, my children.
Right.
It's their enslavement.
Mm-hmm. And they candy coat it to death, don't they? I mean, they just candy coat it using all the great things that we're going to get from it. And but yet you see what I mean. How much blood is being spilt to pursue this agenda? You know, I mean, just pursuing it.
There's a man that used to be on the radio on different stations. His name is William Roberts. Brilliant man, but he's spent a lot of time studying logical positivism,
mm-hmm.
and basically that's the methodology that they use take what they want to do and formulate a message around it to make it sound beneficial, to make it sound good to the masses. But in reality, it's really just the opposite.
Absolutely.
And that's what positivism is about, is just spinning it in such a way that it sounds like it's something good. And free trade is classic example.
Mm-hmm.
Free trade sounds great. Who could be against free trade? but that's not what it's about.
Right.
Same thing with sustainable development. Sustainable development sounds good. But unless you know about the whole UN agenda behind it, unless you really know what those words mean, sustainable development,
mm-hmm.
then you wouldn't know that there's a whole agenda behind there that's all about collectivization and making you live the way that they want you to live.
Absolutely.
Where, how, and to the point that they want you to live.
Absolutely.
They want to control you like you're a widget in a factory, where they can tell you what to do, when to do, and
absolutely.
How high to jump, and everything else.
You know, I have on my MySpace page for this radio show, I have a list of United Nations warm and fuzzy terms. Sustainable development is on that list. And I'm sure you've seen it kind of circulating the net. It's not something I produce, but I thought it was hilarious because they use a lot of warm and fuzzy terms to try to make it sound all great and dandy. But when you're talking about this, you need to look in. I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to the audience. You need to look into it. You need to do the research and find out what they are doing to create this so-called utopian world government that they're talking about. There's tons of people suffering and dying for this to be accomplished. And these people say they're looking out for your best interest, but whose best interest? And you think they're caring because you're American and those people who are suffering are not? And they're really just looking out for America's interest? No. That's not the case. These people are not looking out for your best interest. And if you look into deeper into it, you will find that to be true.
Yeah. Well, I encourage everybody. Don't believe me. Don't believe anybody. Go read it for yourself, because it's so insane, so crazy that it's hard to believe. And I wouldn't believe it myself if I hadn't read it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's probably pretty much true with everything we've talked about today, and that's how I got involved in doing research, because, you know, I couldn't believe, you know, that they were exporting computer jobs, programmer jobs over to India.
Yeah.
You know, God, I've got to investigate that. That's insane.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who's watching out for our national security? You know, that kind of thing. And so that's why I started researching, because it was too insane for me to believe.
Absolutely.
So I had to go find out for myself.
Yeah, absolutely. And I encourage everybody to follow those instructions. Go to her website. Look at her documentation. Go and find out if it's true. Do it. I dare you. I guarantee you will find out that it is true. And then you got to make a decision on what that means for your future. Are you going to sit there every Friday night and watch American Idol, or are you going to get involved in the political process to stop it? You know, that's what I encourage people to do, is just research this, become aware of it, and if you're in agreement with it, okay, that's part of the democratic process. I believe in that. But I almost guarantee that you are not going to be in agreement with it, and I encourage you to do the research and whatnot. So this is Vicki Davis. Her website is channelingreality.com. Go to her website and research. Please, because this new world order is coming, and I'm telling you right now, when you finally decide that it's not good, it's going to be too late to do anything. That is when it's too late. Don't wait till then, because you're just going to be a slave at that point. You're not going to have the options. The legislation is going to be passed. The government and the control operations are going to be in place. Please just take the time to look into it. Thank you, Dave, Vicki, for coming on the show, and I definitely want to have you back on the show in the future to get into more details of this, especially if you find out anything that comes to light that you want to, like, get out there, feel free to call in, email me, I'll get you on the phone, and we'll, you know, keep us informed on what's going on in this aspect of things.
Okay, will do.
All right, thank you very much.
All right,
much.
Thanks.
All
thank
right,
you,
everybody.
Carl. Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, everybody. The New World Order is coming. I hope you're prepared. I hope you're starting to realize the gravity of what is occurring. And I hope that you're going to take the time to actually research it. I don't want you to believe me. Please don't believe me. Don't believe Vicky. But go and verify that we're wrong. And when you do, and you start to see all this stuff is occurring, and it really starts to hit home what's going on, jump. Either you have to make a decision. You're either going to jump off the bandwagon and you're going to, you know, go do your own thing, continue living the life that you're living, or you're going to get involved in the political process to stop it. And if you are and you don't know how to, get in contact with me. I'll get you in touch with people who are working to stop this. Start a radio show on the internet. Go to nwopodcast.com and start a podcast and send links to everybody that you know. Show them your research. This is how we're going to spread the message. And right now we have an invaluable opportunity to do that because of the internet. Without it, we are not lost. I wouldn't say lost because I'll start a pirate radio station if I have to. But we're going to have our hands tied. So thank you very much to let me see. Where is it? Almost forgot here. It is called the War Against Sleep. Go to their MySpace page, myspace.com/WarAgainstSleep. Check out their music, and I'll talk to you next week.
This is me, black and most hated in all 50. I'm genocide, it's part to cause the right-wing committees. This is me, the witness to governmental conspiracy. Overcrowded cells, great addicts to feed my street. This is me, the one the alien nation want to touch. But my church set me up, all time, wet me up, and at the same time, my own black hole in line, and a bullet with my name in case I go against the grain.
America sleeps while children play with fights set. And my neighbor's hard to love, cause I know each child molest. Money manifests the greed, greed manifests the murder. Murder manifests revenge, so hold the cycle on the spin.
Descendants of Charles Manson never seem to cease, cause every day man impregnates the belly of the beast.
This is me, the United States of Amnesia. Your State of the Union don't address me when my block is in the seizure. This is me, the revolution televised in the century. Millennium Armageddon, every time you hear from mention. This is me,